Chapter 2. Take particular notice of General Tom Thumb at the Egyptian Hall, during his hours of performance. The rapid increase of dwarfs will be first felt in Her Majesty's recruiting department. The standard will, of necessity, be lowered. The dwarfs will grow smaller and smaller. The vulgar expression, a man of his inches, will become a figure of fact, instead of a figure of speech. Crack regiments, household troops especially, will pick the smallest men from all parts of the country, and in the two little porticos at the Horse Guards, two Tom Thumbs will be daily seen, doing duty, mounted on a pair of Shetland ponies. Each of them will be relieved, as Tom Thumb is at this moment, in the intervals of his performance, by a wild man. And a British grenadier will either go into a quart pot, or be an old boy, or blue gull, or flying bull, or some other savage chief of that nature. I will not expatiate upon the number of dwarfs who will be found representing Grecian statues in all parts of the metropolis, because I am inclined to think that this will be a change for the better, and that the engagement of two or three in Trafalgar Square will tend to the improvement of the public taste. The various genteel employments at court, being held by dwarfs, sir, it will be necessary to alter, in some respects, the present regulations. It is quite clear that not even General Tom Thumb himself could preserve a becoming dignity on state occasions, if required to walk about with a scaffolding pole under his arm. Therefore the gold and silver sticks at present used must be cut down into skewers of those precious metals. A twig of the black rod will be quite as much as can be conveniently preserved. The coral and bells of His Royal Highness the Prince of Wales will be used in lieu of the mace at present in existence. And that bauble, as Oliver Cromwell called it, Mr. Hood, its value being first calculated by Mr. Finlayson, the government actuary, will be placed to the credit of the national debt. All this, sir, will be the death of the Constitution. But this is not all. The Constitution dies hard, perhaps, but there is enough disease impending, Mr. Hood, to kill it three times over. Wild men will get into the House of Commons. Imagine that, sir. Imagine strong wind in the House of Commons. It is not an easy matter to get through a debate now, but I say, imagine strong wind, speaking for the benefit of his constituents, upon the floor of the House of Commons, or imagine, which is pregnant with more awful consequences still, the ministry having an interpreter in the House of Commons, to tell the country, in English, what it really means. Why, sir, that in itself would be blowing the Constitution out of the mortar in St. James Park, and leaving nothing of it to be seen but smoke. But this, I repeat it, is the state of things to which we are fast tending, Mr. Hood, and I enclose my card for your private eye, that you may be quite certain of it. What the condition of this country will be, when its standing army is composed of dwarfs, with here and there a wild man, to throw its ranks into confusion, like the elephants employed in war in former times, I leave you to imagine, sir. It may be objected by some hopeful jackanapeses, that the number of impressments in the navy, consequent upon the seizure of the Boygeneses, or remaining portion of the population ambitious of court favor, will be in itself sufficient to defend our island from foreign invasion. But I tell those jackanapeses, sir, that while I admit the wisdom of the Boy Jones precedent, of kidnapping such youths after the expiration of their several terms of imprisonment as vagabonds, hurrying them on board ship, and packing them off to sea again, whenever they venture to take the air on shore, I deny the justice of the inference. Inasmuch as it appears to me that the inquiring minds of those young outlaws must naturally lead to their being hanged by the enemy as spies, early in their career, and before they shall have been rated on the books of our fleet as able seamen. Such, Mr. Hood, sir, is the prospect before us. And unless you, and some of your friends who have influence at court, can get up a giant as a forlorn hope, it is all over with this ill-fated land. In reference to your own affairs, sir, you will take whatever course may seem to you most prudent and advisable after this warning. It is not a warning to be slighted. That I happen to know. I am informed by the gentleman who favors this, that you have recently been making some changes and improvements in your magazine, and are, in point of fact, starting afresh. If I be well informed, and this be really so, rely upon it, that you cannot start too small, sir. Come down to the duodecimo size instantly, Mr. Hood. Take time by the forelock, and, reducing the stature of your magazine every month, bring it at last to the dimensions of the little almanac no longer issued, I regret to say, by the ingenious Mr. Schloss, which was invisible to the naked eye until examined through a little eyeglass. You project, I am told, the publication of a new novel, by yourself, in the pages of your magazine. A word in your ear. I am not a young man, sir, and have had some experience. Don't put your own name on the title page. It would be suicide and madness. Treat with General Tom Thumb, Mr. Hood, for the use of his name on any terms. If the gallant general should decline to treat with you, get Mr. Barnum's name, which is the next best in the market. And when, through this politic course, you shall have received, in presence, a richly jeweled set of tablets from Buckingham Palace, and a gold watch and appendages from Marlborough House, and when those valuable trinkets shall be left under a glass case at your publisher's for inspection by your friends and the public in general, then, sir, you will do me the justice of remembering this communication. It is unnecessary for me to add, after what I have observed in the course of this letter, that I am not, sir, ever your constant reader. Tuesday, 23rd April 1844. P.S. Impress it upon your contributors, that they cannot be too short, and that if not dwarfish, they must be wild, or at all events not tame. Crime and Education. I offer no apology for entreating the attention of the readers of the Daily News to an effort which has been making for some 3 years and a half, and which is making now, to introduce among the most miserable and neglected outcasts in London, some knowledge of the commonest principles of morality and religion, to commence their recognition as immortal human creatures, before the gaol chaplain becomes their only schoolmaster, to suggest to society that its duty to this wretched throng, foredoomed to crime and punishment, rightfully begins at some distance from the police office, and that the careless maintenance from year to year, in this, the capital city of the world, of a vast hopeless nursery of ignorance, misery and vice, a breeding place for the hulks and jails, is horrible to contemplate. This attempt is being made in certain of the most obscure and squalid parts of the metropolis, where rooms are opened, at night, for the gratuitous instruction of all comers, children or adults, under the title of ragged schools. The name implies the purpose. They who are too ragged, wretched, filthy, and forlorn, to enter any other place, who could gain admission into no charity school, and who would be driven from any church door, are invited to come in here, and find some people not depraved, willing to teach them something, and show them some sympathy, and stretch a hand out, which is not the iron hand of law, for their correction. Before I describe a visit of my own to a ragged school, and urge the readers of this letter for God's sake to visit one themselves, and think of it which is my main object, let me say, that I know the prisons of London well, that I have visited the largest of them more times than I could count, and that the children in them are enough to break the heart and hope of any man. I have never taken a foreigner, or a stranger of any kind to one of these establishments, but I have seen him so moved at sight of the child offenders, and so affected by the contemplation of their utter renouncement and desolation outside the prison walls, that he has been as little able to disguise his emotion, as if some great grief had suddenly burst upon him. Mr. Chesterton and Lieutenant Tracy, the new more intelligent and humane governors of prisons, it would be hard, if not impossible, To find, know perfectly well, that these children pass and repass through the prisons all their lives, that they are never taught, that the first distinctions between right and wrong are, from their cradles, perfectly confounded and perverted in their minds, that they come of untaught parents, and will give birth to another untaught generation, that in exact proportion to their natural abilities, is the extent and scope of their depravity, and that there is no escape or chance for them in any ordinary revolution of human affairs. Happily, there are schools in these prisons now. If any readers doubt how ignorant the children are, let them visit those schools, and see them at their tasks, and hear how much they knew when they were sent there. If they would know the produce of this seed, let them see a class of men and boys together, at their books,
as I have seen them in the House of Correction for this county of Middlesex,
and mark how painfully the full-grown felons toil at the very shape and form of letters, their ignorance being so confirmed and solid. The contrast of this labor in the men, with the less blunted quickness of the boys, the latent shame and sense of degradation struggling through their dull attempts at infant lessons, and the universal eagerness to learn, impress me, in this passing retrospect, more painfully than I can tell. For the instruction, and as a first step in the reformation, of such unhappy beings, the ragged schools were founded. I was first attracted to the subject, and indeed was first made conscious of their existence, about 2 years ago, or more, by seeing an advertisement in the papers dated from West Street, Saffron Hill, stating that a room had been opened, and supported in that wretched neighborhood for upwards of 12 months, where religious instruction had been imparted to the poor, and explaining in a few words, what was meant by ragged schools as a generic term, including, then, 4 or 5 similar places of instruction. I wrote to the masters of this particular school, to make some further inquiries, and went myself soon afterwards. It was a hot summer night, and the air of Field Lane and Saffron Hill was not improved by such weather, nor were the people in those streets very sober or honest company. Being unacquainted with the exact locality of the school, I was fain to make some inquiries about it. These were very jocosely received in general, but everybody knew where it was, and gave the right direction to it. The prevailing idea among the loungers, the greater part of them the very sweepings of the streets and station houses, seemed to be, that the teachers were quixotic, and the school upon the whole a lark. But there was certainly a kind of rough respect for the intention, and, as I have said, nobody denied the school or its whereabouts, or refused assistance in directing to it. It consisted at that time of either 2 or 3, I forget which, miserable rooms, upstairs in a miserable house. In the best of these, the pupils in the female school were being taught to read and write, and though there were among the number many wretched creatures steeped in degradation to the lips, they were tolerably quiet, and listened with apparent earnestness and patience to their instructors. The appearance of this room was sad and melancholy, of course, how could it be otherwise? But, on the whole, encouraging. The close, low chamber at the back, in which the boys were crowded, was so foul and stifling as to be, at first, almost insupportable. But its moral aspect was so far worse than its physical, that this was soon forgotten. Huddled together on a bench about the room, and shone out by some flaring candles stuck against the walls, were a crowd of boys, varying from mere infants to young men, sellers of fruit, herbs, lucifer matches, flints, sleepers under the dry arches of bridges, young thieves and beggars with nothing natural to youth about them, with nothing frank, ingenuous, or pleasant in their faces, low-browed, vicious, cunning, wicked, abandoned of all help but this, speeding downward to destruction, and unutterably ignorant. This, reader, was one room as full as it could hold, but these were only grains in sample of a multitude that are perpetually sifting through these schools, in sample of a multitude who had within them once, and perhaps have now, the elements of men as good as you or I, and maybe infinitely better,
ensample of a multitude among whose doomed and sinful ranks,
oh, think of this, and think of them.
The child of any man upon this earth, however lofty his degree, must, as by destiny and fate, be found, if, at its birth, it were consigned to such an infancy and nurture as these fallen creatures had. This was the class I saw at the ragged school. They could not be trusted with books. They could only be instructed orally. They were difficult of reduction to anything like attention, obedience, or decent behavior. Their benighted ignorance in reference to the deity, or to any social duty.
How could they guess at any social duty, being so discarded by all social teachers, but the gaoler and the hangman?
Was terrible to see. Yet, even here, and among these, something had been done already. The ragged school was of recent date and very poor, but he had inculcated some association with the name of the Almighty, which was not an oath, and had taught them to look forward in a hymn,
they sang it,
to another life, which would correct the miseries and woes of this. The new exposition I found in this ragged school, of the frightful neglect by the state of those whom it punishes so constantly, and whom it might, as easily and less expensively, instruct and save, together with the sight I had seen there, in the heart of London, haunted me, and finally impelled me to an endeavor, to bring these institutions under the notice of the government, with some faint hope that the vastness of the question would supersede the theology of the schools, and that the bench of bishops might adjust the latter question, after some small grant had been conceded. I made the attempt, and have heard no more of the subject from that hour. The perusal of an advertisement in yesterday's paper, announcing a lecture on the ragged schools last night, has led me into these remarks. I might easily have given them another form, but I address this letter to you, in the hope that some few readers in whom I have awakened an interest, as a writer of fiction, may be, by that means, attracted to the subject, who might otherwise, unintentionally, pass it over. I have no desire to praise the system pursued in the ragged schools, which is necessarily very imperfect, if indeed there be one. So far as I have any means of judging of what is taught there, I should individually object to it, as not being sufficiently secular, and as presenting too many religious mysteries and difficulties, to minds not sufficiently prepared for their reception. But I should very imperfectly discharge in myself the duty I wish to urge, and impress on others, if I allowed any such doubt of mine, to interfere with my appreciation of the efforts of these teachers, or my true wish, to promote them by any slight means in my power. Irritating topics, of all kinds, are equally far removed from my purpose and intention. But, I adjure those excellent persons who aid, munificently, in the building of new churches, to think of these ragged schools, to reflect whether some portion of their rich endowments might not be spared for such a purpose, to contemplate, calmly, the necessity of beginning at the beginning, to consider for themselves, where the Christian religion most needs, and most suggests immediate help and illustration, and not to decide on any theory or hearsay, but to go themselves into the prisons and the ragged schools, and form their own conclusions. They will be shocked, pained, and repelled, by much that they learn there, but nothing they can learn will be 1,000th part so shocking, painful, and repulsive, as the continuance for 1 year more of these things as they have been for too many years already. Anticipating that some of the more prominent facts connected with the history of the ragged schools may become known to the readers of the Daily News through your account of the lecture in question, I. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.